Coming up next on Tech News Today, Waymo is intensifying its IP case against Uber. Google knows you're human. It knows you're not a robot, even without the CAPTCHA. A prototype drone based on insect wings actually makes it more resilient. Vehicle-to-vehicle communication technology gets its first big push in the United States, and some pythons are really happy. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1722, recorded Friday, March 10th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
Welcome to Tech News Today. We're glad you're here. We talk about the things that happen in technology today.
Yeah, we do.
We do. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. In fact, we spoke about everything that happened in technology news five todays this week. This being the fifth today. You know how I know?
How?
Because we start work on Monday and we end work on Friday, and there's 5 days there. That's how I know. See?
5 whole days of tech news.
Huh?
Yeah, and what do we have to show for it?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Shall we start the fifth day?
We might as well.
The Verge reports that according to new documents in Google Waymo's stolen intellectual property case against Uber, Google's parent company, Alphabet, has filed a federal injunction to stop Uber's self-driving research. The documents filed are part of a case that we reported last month that involves Google's claim that Uber stole Waymo's designs for LiDAR, which is, of course, a key technology of the driverless car. Uber maintains that Google's claims are baseless.
But Uber hasn't come out specifically on this development and made any more claim than that based on what they said last time versus.
No, I mean, this is all part of this. This just came out today, this extra news that they were trying to stop, which, of course, if I was competing, I try to do injunctions on you all the time.
Yeah, you try like and stop me in my tracks.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to work
right
this time.
I'm just kidding. We don't compete. Nope. But I think that that it seems like par for the course in a fight like this. Of course, the case revolves around Anthony Lewandowski. He's accused of downloading 14,000 highly confidential and proprietary design files. And I don't think Uber made a statement today yet.
No, I haven't seen that at all. Waymo is seeking expedited discovery in that pursuit. They also included three sworn testimonies to support the claims right off the bat. From Waymo's security engineer, LiDAR tech lead, and supply chain operations director. And the testimony also actually has two other defectors from Waymo to Otto that apparently had also taken files with them, including a document that had the company's external vendors, so a vendors list. So, Waymo appears utterly convinced based on the evidence that it has that this is happening. And I mean, they have a lot to lose, right? They're doing the software, they're doing the hardware. A lot of the other competitors in the space are focusing on one part of that. Waymo plans to market its LiDAR technology to others. And if others already have their LiDAR technology based on based on stolen documents, then that does a lot to affect Waymo's business monetarily. So there you go. There's nothing I love more than spending an afternoon with CAPTCHAs. Don't you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Those are the sign-in page challenges that aim to make sure you are a human and not a spam bot by posting pictures and words, checkboxes, challenging you to make determinations about what you see. Well, Google is looking to make things a bit less annoying for us humans by making CAPTCHAs invisible. Google isn't actually telling us how it's doing this, but the company is certain its systems can now recognize when you are a human and when you might be a robot posing as a human. If you pass the test, you'll never actually see a CAPTCHA challenge anymore. It will have already determined you are a human when you get to the point that you would normally get a CAPTCHA. If you don't pass the test, of course, you'd end up being presented with a CAPTCHA, to which makes me think that anytime I see a CAPTCHA, I'd be like, well, what? Am I not human? Or what's going on here?
Westworld moment.
Yeah, exactly. am I discovering something about myself that I didn't know?
Yes. So what you're trying to say is a robot's job to be able to determine whether I'm a robot or not.
Yeah, robots should just know.
If they're kind or not. Yeah, exactly. I like CAPTCHAs. I don't mind the CAPTCHA. Oh, I've never minded the CAPTCHA, especially because when I first read the story, I thought, but the CAPTCHA is used. Remember, like they're using it to digitize books. And I thought, oh, well, if they take it away, then books won't be digitized. But then I read that they've already digitized all the books.
Yeah. turns out that was really effective. Almost too effective. Right. They don't need it anymore.
Yeah. If you imagine how many people are recapturing. So they recapture completely digitized the archives of the New York Times, the entire archives of the New York Times and Google Books. And that happened in 2011. So
what next?
Yeah, exactly. But I will tell you what I would like AI to do. And we had this discussion earlier, you and I, is get rid of those dumb security questions. Because that is not a way. I couldn't get into an account because I couldn't remember the answer to my security questions. And I probably lied. I probably made up the answer.
Because that's what they tell you to do, right? Like, don't put your real answer in the security questions. Right. Have something that's completely disconnected, because if you let too much information out there, people can guess your security question answers.
So I want AI to do that.
That would be nice. Mm-hmm. AI should figure out just a way around passwords in general. Mm-hmm. I always wondered, you know, when you go to a site and instead of getting like a full blown CAPTCHA, you end up getting this little box that says I'm not a robot. And I always wondered, well, why is my checking that box telling it I'm not a robot? Couldn't a robot do that? Turns out, I did some reading into this. Back in 2014, Google implemented the I'm not a robot checkbox, basically used a number of signals that it already, so, you know, kind of matches up to your account, your IP address, your browser that you're using, your cookies, your history activity, also uses your mousing activity when you check the box to determine, like, is it too precise? Mm-hmm. Is it super duper quick the second it appears on the screen, or is there a delay? All that kind of stuff, so that AI could determine that you were a robot based on just clicking that single box. So now, it's a little bit like this, which, man, I don't know. What does it think then when it's a robot hand touching the screen? So probably this is an extension of that, right? Still using those signals before you know, without even having to require you clicking on a box on the screen. It's tracking all this stuff about you anyways and your usage of the internet through your Google account. So it just kind of already knows.
Okay. So what we've learned from this, if you see a recaptcha or a captcha, you are a robot. Sorry. Have a good life.
Yes. That's what we learned.
Yes. Kurt Wagner over at Recode reports that Facebook is testing a new feature that will remind you to finish those videos that you started watching, just in case you wanted to finish that home video of a puppy tearing up a couch. You know, the really funny one that you absolutely stopped watching because you knew you had better things to do. Kurt says Facebook is testing the continue watching feature only on the web version of Facebook right now, and it's part of the company's lean back strategy that involves asking video creators to create longer videos and making Facebook like the new TV. And of course, longer videos also make room for more mid-roll ads. So this seems to be this part of this big fight that Facebook, and I know Snapchat is trying to do this lean back strategy, which is just that they want everybody's eyeballs. They don't want this and then that. They want you to just sit back and absorb all their content and their advertising, as many people do with YouTube now. Many people in my house do. This is just a test for now. Tests with Facebook sometimes account for nothing, but I personally, if I scroll through a video that I started watching, that means I'm done with it, Facebook, FYI.
See, and I can think of many times where I haven't been on Facebook in a long time at this point. I'm actually realizing how long I've been away from Facebook since the beginning of December. But I can remember many times where I'd be scanning through the news feed. I'd see a video. I'd be like, oh, that looks interesting. It would autoplay and I'd realize, oh, that's 10 minutes long. Like, I don't have time for that right now. And so I could actually see this being super beneficial in light, especially of the TV kind of product that we heard of a few weeks ago. If you sit down at your TV and you see all these things that you started but didn't finish, as long as it isn't like, you know, isn't invasive and like forcing you to watch things that you actually had no interest in. So I don't know how it figures that out. But I could imagine there could be a nice little playlist built up of things that I was like, oh yeah, that's right, I did want to watch that, but I had to, you know, go record the show called Tech News Today. I couldn't do it right then.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you're right. I don't know how much you have to watch of it to,
yeah,
to have them think
it.
That you really wanted to watch it. There's an Apple TV app and an iPad app called Hyper that I really like. I don't know if it's on Android, but it's curated YouTube videos, mostly science-y, interesting stuff. And it's about 5 a day. And it's really great to just sit down, especially like with my kids. And I know it's going to be, you know, 15, 20 minutes of good stuff that someone else had looked at. It's like, you know, it's some Verge videos, and I don't think any of our videos are there yet, but it's nice. And that led to me is like appointment viewing. Like we're going to sit down and watch that. This to me sounds more like what we used to do in the old days where you just flip through the channels and you maybe watch 2 or 3 minutes of something that, you know, after you're done, you wish you had that time back.
Yeah. Especially I think your question of what actually qualifies as a video you would want to revisit is a really valid question, because if you're scrolling through that news feed for 10 or 15 minutes and Facebook auto fires, you know, the auto plays all of those videos, that list could get really healthy, really, you know, really full,
yes,
really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be a lot of stuff you scroll past for a very good reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose we'll see. Drones are super cool, but many drones are also super fragile, especially for things that whiz through the air and sometimes encounter obstacles in the sky. A group of researchers have built a prototype drone based on the physical properties of the wings of insects to become kind of malleable and as such resilient upon impact. The wings will actually avoid breaking into pieces, and instead it kind of shapeshifts thanks to flexible joints that can absorb powerful shocks to the system. Kind of the trick here is that the wings, if you want to call them that, the wings with the four blades, is its own design that's really kind of flexible. And then the magnetic pod that sits in the middle is kind of the brains and the battery and everything that drives the wings. They can separate upon impact. And when they do, there's nothing that's actually broken in the process. It just kind of removes itself. You can plop it back in there. It snaps into place with a magnetic fastening system to the wings. And they did a ton of testing and just realize this is a great way to design your drones, especially when there are going to be drones everywhere delivering our stuff and we don't want them to fall on us.
Right, exactly. But I would like it to bounce off my head like that. Yeah, that looks a lot like my living room all the time with the drones
so cool
that we have.
So neat.
They've been designing drones with the idea of nature in mind, like copying nature for a while. I remember I saw this in a TED Talk, I think, that drone bodies, like the big quadcopters, are kind of the same body as a flying squirrel. Like if you look at the skeleton
yes
of a flying
okay
squirrel,
yeah, I could see
and
that
a quadcopter,
yeah,
they're sort of the same. And then a few years ago, a research team from Hungary developed an algorithm that would allow a number of drones to fly together in the same way that a flock of birds fly together. So, yeah, just in that same. Yeah, nature
kind of
is awesome.
Nature is
nature
cool
knows everything. We just need to follow what they do. There's drones could be used in the future for assisted agricultural pollination.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to get a different rating on this. You know, this podcast or anything, but you know what I'm talking about, the birds and the bees.
I know, but I hate
the actual birds and bees.
Right.
I mean,
there was a little bit of I was confused for a second, but now I understand. Yes, I hate to say, this is a theme, a point from an episode of Black Mirror, so it all goes back to Black Mirror. There you go. Another reason to watch, because it could actually be telling the future when it comes to drones pollinating flowers in the world and what can happen. Highly recommend it.
We got Black Mirror and Westworld in the
yes
span of 10 minutes.
Our bingo card is looking up today.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
Business Insider says the scandal around explicit images of service women is bigger than just one Facebook group. Last weekend, the website The Reveal reported that the U.S. Department of Defense was investigating a private Facebook book called Marines United that was used to share naked photographs of female service members and veterans. Now a source tells Business Insider that a site called AnonIB features also explicit photos, many of the same photos, as well as personal identifying information of the women featured in the photos. Anon IB was widely seen as a place where servicemen could request the photos of active duty personnel and veterans from all branches of the military, not just the Marines. You know, I've been hearing this story all week and just sort of trying to ignore it, but I thought it was worth talking about because, you know, it's nice to be able to just put this under the rug, but it really happens. And it's happening not just, I'm sure, with service members, but, you know, all groups of people. And it's just this, you know, it's so easy to snap a picture and send it to someone. And, you know, for women, and it's like, you know, we as women feel more powerful in this day and age. But, you know, once that picture is out of your hands, you lose all your power and something like this happens. And it's horrible.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of the, what was it called? The celeb photo, the celeb gate.
Or fappening. Or...
that was one word for it. Yes.
Sorry.
But no, it reminds me of that too, where it's just, you know, this is a reality of life in the digital age. And the truth is that image is very easily replicated an unlimited amount of times and transferred in all these different places. I mean, the story's uncomfortable. It's awful to know that stuff like this happens. I think the priority obviously has to be on taking care of this, you know, quickly, thoroughly. Otherwise, I mean, it's going to continue and probably push it into other areas. It started with a Facebook group, and now there's this discovery that there are actually, you know, probably more sites than even they've realized here. And it's just demoralizing. I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm not a woman, obviously. I can't imagine being in that position and enlisting, knowing that that is as pervasive as it seems like it is. It's just demoralizing.
Yeah, I mean, the Pentagon is investigating it, but you know, I don't know how far they're going to go. And you know, the site apparently popped up because there was, you know, someone, a comment on it. Business Insider said there was a comment on it saying, like, well, put all your photos here before they, you know, they blow up that Facebook group and get rid of all of them. But that's not the way it works. I mean, those photos are there. They're not, you know, we know how the internet works. Like, they're not going anywhere. There's someone has them and you know, you can't get rid of them. So I don't know what they're going to do. It has to, you know, it's not about getting rid of the photos. It's about changing the way people think and view each other.
Value system and all that. And
you know how they view the internet and its ability to, you know, for things to spread very quickly,
and how they respect the people that they work alongside, you know, fellow human beings. So the author of the original article from last Saturday on The Reveal is a Marine veteran, Purple Heart recipient, and I guess apparently he and his family have received like numerous death threats ever since. And you know, that's just it's an ugly reality, you know, an ugly aspect and an ugly reality of the internet.
Yeah. Well, if driverless cars are our future, then the vehicles are going to have to learn to get along. We'll find out how that works after the break. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. Mortgages, I believe, this is my personal belief, that they are intentionally confusing because of how bananas it is that you're paying that much money for anything. It's crazy when you think about it. Now, if you're going to put this process into someone else's hands, and we all probably do, unless you are a mortgage broker, it's important to work with someone who you can trust and someone who has your best interest in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. Don't waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval process in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time to make sure that you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. So whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online. We know you want to. QuickenLoans.com/TNT. That's QuickenLoans.com/TNT. Don't forget to add the TNT. That way that they know that we sent you to them. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
V2V, or vehicle-to-vehicle communications technology, is getting a head start this week. Joining us to talk about that is Sam Abuelsamid from Navigant Research. Great to have you back, Sam.
Hey, Megan and Jason. Great to be back again.
It's awesome to have you back. So you wrote on Forbes about how Cadillac is now shipping sedans with V2V capabilities. Is this kind of the first time that we're seeing this in kind of a large number in the U.S.?
Yes, the first application in the U.S. market. Toyota launched a couple of models with V2V communications in the Japanese market in late 2015. And they're probably going to start introducing some vehicles here in the next year or so, but they haven't made any product announcements here yet. But yeah, this application is the first one here in the U.S. market, and we'll probably see at least a couple more from Cadillac before the end of this year.
Wow. Okay. So what capabilities does this bring to the supported Cadillacs at this point? Because I know the long-term capabilities and the promise of V2V, but what do you get in the short term?
So for this initial application, they've got three messages that are three different types of alerts that the system will provide to the driver. So what these do is the vehicles with V2V communications will broadcast messages 10 times a second when the stability control gets activated, indicating you're on a slippery road surface. If the driver hits the brakes hard, indicating a panic stop, or if hazard lights go on. And when that happens, that vehicle will broadcast the messages. It's a standard type of message that get broadcast to any other vehicle within about a 1,000-foot radius that has the V2V hardware built in. And then those vehicles will get an alert in the dashboard, you know, indicating what's going on. So, you know, if the driver, you know, if somebody down the road suddenly slows down or swerves and the driver in front of or behind them hits the brakes hard, you'll get an alert before you get to that point. So you have more time to react and slow down before you get into an accident.
So back in December, NHTSA proposed a mandate to make V2V technology required in all new light vehicles. That was December. We are now in a new administration. What's going on with that now?
So there's been no decisions yet based on what's going to happen with that mandate yet. At this point, it looks like that's probably not going to get enacted. I mean, anything can change, but based on the executive order that was signed in early February that required that for every new regulation that gets enacted, two old regulations have to be rescinded. So that's probably going to keep the V2V regulation from getting enacted anytime soon. But nonetheless, GM is moving ahead with deployment of V2V, and we'll probably see, as I mentioned, Toyota and probably Honda as the next companies that launch this technology within the next year or so. And one of the things with the V2V mandate is, unlike a lot of regulations, it was generally supported by most of the industry. So I think we'll see a bunch of different car makers installing V2V hardware, starting to put their V2V hardware out into the marketplace over the next couple of years.
Kind of take it into their own hands and do it for, you know, they probably already kind of set the wheels in motion, no pun intended, maybe a little.
Right. Well, there's a lot of benefits to the technology, especially, you know, as we go forward and start deploying autonomous vehicles in the early 2020s, it's going to help a lot with those.
Yeah, for sure.
Are there any drawbacks to the technology? I mean, is there any reason why not to regulate this?
Mainly, I mean, you know, as with anything, when you add some extra hardware to the vehicle, there's going to be a bit of an additional cost. Initially, it works out, it's estimated to be about $300 per vehicle, but that cost is going to come down pretty rapidly, especially since V2V, the current V2V systems are based on, basically, it's a variation of Wi-Fi technology, just operating on different frequencies, and it's at 5.9 gigahertz, and there's a specific messaging protocol. But, you know, really, it's pretty straightforward, and as the cost comes down, as it gets deployed in more vehicles, the cost is going to come down, and, you know, I think eventually, by the mid-2020s, it will probably be pretty much universal in the U.S., even if there isn't a regulation.
Right. What about a standard here? Is there actually a V2V standard right now? And if so, is it kind of a risk? Or if not, I guess, is it kind of a risk to roll out V2V technology at this point without a standard in place?
Yeah, actually, there is a standard. The industry, the automakers and a bunch of suppliers, as well as regulators, including the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, have been working on this stuff for more than a decade. SAE, the Society of Automotive Engineers, has a couple of standards that cover both the messaging protocols for V2V, as well as the actual message formats. So as long as everybody adheres to those standards, it should all be interoperable between systems from different manufacturers. So, you know, your Hondas should be able to talk to GMs, and Toyotas should be able to talk to Fords. And then eventually the hope is to also have these V2V or these DSRC radios, dedicated short-range communications radios, on infrastructure like traffic lights, mm-hmm. And utility poles and things like that, so that it can transmit information about traffic conditions, provide light timing information to cars, so that as you get into autonomous vehicles, they'll know when the lights are going to change, or you can also provide alerts to the drivers, you know, provide a countdown when the light's going to change, that sort of thing, so you can hopefully get smoother traffic flow.
So you said it's a specific messaging protocol, and that there are standards in place. But I'm thinking of like the Internet of Things, where, you know, it just is a mess. There are standards, but, you know, my Nest won't work with HomeKit, and this won't work with that. And so, do you think that the car makers have learned from that, and they will keep to the standards, or will it be, you know, will we expect competition to lead to something like how, you know, Jason can't get my iMessage because he's on an Android phone?
No, in this case, it's I think the manufacturers are going to try and stick as close as possible to the standard, because they know that this will only work if all vehicles can talk to all vehicles, and as well as talking to infrastructure and pedestrians and cyclists. If people start going off in different directions and doing, you know, and having version, you know, something like iMessage versus Allo, it's never going to work, and it's going to be completely useless. So the industry understands that, and they're sticking quite close to it. In fact, here in the Ann Arbor area, there's been a pilot project for the last 4 years testing this with several thousand vehicles equipped with this hardware, as well as having it on some of the infrastructure around the city of Ann Arbor to test the equipment from different manufacturers and make sure it's all interoperable. So I don't think we'll see the sort of problems we have in the IoT world.
I can totally understand kind of the benefit and the value of V2V, you know, when you're talking about cars talking to each other. What about software companies? Like, you know, Google has its Maps product, or Waze, or Apple's Maps, or whatever. Are there plans, or are there thoughts that this technology would also fold in kind of like a third party way into software developers' hands?
Yeah, that's actually part of what's going on, as part of the extension of this into vehicle to infrastructure, to get data from vehicles and collect it and aggregate it. So I was actually in Virginia earlier this week to do a presentation to NEMA, the National Electrical Manufacturers Association, which includes companies that build some of these roadside units. And traffic control systems, things like that. So there's a number of companies that are developing technologies, developing applications on the infrastructure side to collect some of this data, share it back to the vehicle fleets, also to share it to mapping companies. So there's a number of ways that this data will be spread out and used to both hopefully enhance traffic flow, improve safety, and also, as we get into autonomous vehicles, to make autonomous vehicle control more robust by adding an extra layer on top of the sensors. Because the sensors, you know, those LiDAR sensors and radar sensors that you have on autonomous vehicles, you know, just like our eyes, they can't see through other objects. You know, so you're limited to line of sight. But what we call V2X, or vehicle to external communications, which is the broader umbrella term for all of this stuff, can see further beyond line of sight and add extra situational awareness for the vehicles, so they can make more proactive decisions earlier on and hopefully give you smoother, safer control.
Yeah, the more pieces of information it has, the safer you are. That's kind of the overall goal.
Exactly.
Awesome. Sam Abou-El-Samid, really appreciate you taking time out tonight to talk with us about this. Where can people follow all of your work online?
You can find me at navigantresearch.com, which is my company's website, where I'm a senior analyst on the transportation team. You can also find my writings on Forbes, and you can find me chatting every week with my friend Dan Roth on the Wheel Bearings podcast at wheelbearings.media.
Right on. Appreciate it once again, Sam. Have a great weekend.
You guys have a great weekend, too.
We will. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We got an email from Raymond Dirk. He sent this email last week about a story that we told you about, Netflix socks that you can knit and the DIY wearable from Netflix that automatically pauses your Netflix binging, if you stop working out. And he says, as much as I would love to learn to knit some Netflix socks, you can do another DIY project with IFTTT to perfectly pause your binge watching. I set an alert where if my sleep is greater than 0.01 hours on my Fitbit, then it will turn off the TV with a Wemo smart plug. It's easy to set up, environmentally friendly for those of us who leave the TV on, and we don't have to get poked with wires and an Arduino board. Thank you so much, Raymond.
That's awesome. That's smart.
I would like a definition of easy to set up. I mean, do you have a Wemo smart plug?
I don't have a Wemo smart plug. I don't have a Fitbit. I have played around with If This Then That. This Then That is probably the brains behind this. Mm-hmm. If you're already sharing out information from your Fitbit to If This Then That or to the Fitbit Cloud or whatever, and If This Then That can tap into it, mm-hmm. it's probably actually not that complicated. Mm-hmm. It's probably just syncing up those individual units to If This Then That and then setting up a simple recipe, I would guess.
But Raymond, what about hackers? What if hackers could turn off your Netflix?
Oh no, what are you going to do? TV just keeps on going out. You can't finish your show. That would be the end of the world.
That would be torture, that'd be horrible. Depending on the show.
Thanks for sending that in. That's awesome. Coming up, the happiest python you've ever seen. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. So they're not under the couch, they're not in the cupboard, they're not on the table, you just can't find them. The meeting's in 20 minutes and you're looking for your keys, they're nowhere to be found. We've all been in a situation similar to that, maybe swap keys for phone or whatever, remote, although you're probably not taking your TV remote to your meeting, but you know what I mean. With Tracker, you never have to worry about losing things again. The Tracker Bravo is a coin-sized device constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can locate misplaced keys, wallets, bags, computers in seconds. You just pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with a tap of a button. And that's all there is to it. If you happen to lose your phone, you just press the button on the Tracker device and ask your Amazon Echo, and your phone rings even when it's on silent. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at one time, and you can customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. With over 4.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item is going to show up on a map, even if it's miles away. The Tracker app records its last known location, and then when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item's located so you can go get it. A 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no reason not to give it a try. You can check it out for yourself. Stop losing your stuff today. Go to thetracker.com and enter promo code TNT. That'll get you a free Tracker Bravo with any order that you place. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for your free Tracker Bravo with any order. And we thank Tracker for their support. TNT's fan of the day is Rich from Palo Alto, who sent us this photo inspired by last night's show. Apparently it's Cat Week on Tech News Today. And I feel the need to sneeze.
I know, me too.
Every time.
That's the biggest secret of Tech News Today that most people don't know. Or maybe you do know. We are both allergic to cats.
Oh, boy.
So it's good that you guys are watching from far away and not here with your cats.
Yeah. Thank you for sending your How I Watches of cats in photo form and not actually sending us your cats.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
But that would be a way to really get to us if they just send us a bunch of cat hair in an envelope.
Man. That's one way to get me right immediately. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. You can post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. But don't send us your cats in real form. Send it in photo form to those services and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it.
Everyone should have a dream. Justin Kobielka's dream was to create a snake with emoji on its scales. Are they scales or are they skin? I guess it's snake skin. I don't know. It only took him 8 years to do it. It's called the Emoji Ball Python. Kobielka created it through breeding because recessive mutation causes this pattern. So this snake, he is a snake breeder. He could sell the snake for $4,500, but he says he's going to keep it. So it has two smiley emoji on there and one alien emoji. Very exciting. Best Python story you've heard all day, I'm sure.
It's a Python story on a technology podcast that has nothing to do with Python.
It's true. Yes. And we are not allergic to pythons either. I'm not. Are you?
I don't know. I can't tell you
never
if I've ever
touched a python.
If I have, I didn't spend enough time with one to find out whether I'm allergic to it or not because snakes kind of freak me out a little bit. But this is, okay. Hey, when you've got a dream to put an emoji, to make sure an emoji ends up on your snake skin, more power to you, as long as it's not hurting the snake, which I don't believe it was in this case.
I don't know. Great. I mean, I don't believe in breeding dogs, so I guess I don't really believe also in breeding snakes for our own. But I don't know if there's as much of a snake overpopulation problem. If you know of that, let me know.
This is definitely a gap in my own knowledge. I don't know very much about snakes, but I do know that ball pythons, they're a super relaxed, small snake, as you saw, good as pets, apparently, not venomous. So that definitely helps them being good as pets, and they're friendly, even more so when they've got smiley faces all over
them. Exactly.
So, there you go. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter, @TechNewsTodayTV.
And you can find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you know whether there's a snake overpopulation problem, please tweet that at me.
We need to know.
I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Anthony. Thanks to Mario for helping out here in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you. Yes, you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye, everybody.